on applications asking about an applicant's previous arrest records or convictions. Have you ever been discriminated against for housing or a job? Do call in and tell us about it.
Tune in to KABU for the 27th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. KABU will again broadcast the entire festival from noon to 10 p.m., July 3rd through the 6th. The broadcast will also be carried by various stations of Oregon Community Media for statewide coverage of this Oregon Food Bank Benefit Festival. Again, July 3rd through the 6th, noon to 10 p.m. each day here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Did you know that KABU's daily evening newscast is produced by a team of volunteers right here in our Portland studios? If you've got some extra time and would like to get free training in radio news production, come on down to the studio and get involved. You can learn interviewing, writing, editing, and production skills, all for free, in a fun and supportive environment. Call KABU's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at 503-231-8032 to get involved. That number again is 503-231-8032 to volunteer with the KABU Evening News.
Santa Muerte, or Saint Death, is pictured as a female skeleton in robes. Her shrines are found in Mexican prison cells and drug houses. She presides over the shadowy battleground of the war between the Gulf Cartel and Los Zetas. Hi, this is Per Fagring, host of Fight the Empire. Thursday, I'll be speaking with Michael Diebert, author of In the Shadow of Saint Death. That's Thursday, July 3rd at 9:30 a.m. in the Shadow of Saint Death on KBOO, your radio station.
You put a big black blob in the middle of Canada and you reach out a tentacle to every part of the coast. There's a giant octopus that's essentially wrapping its tentacles around North America.
I find it marvelous how people can somehow drive down a 18-lane freeway in their SUV, cursing and swearing about products of the oil sands coming to California. As Pogo said, we've seen the enemy and he is us.
This Monday, July 7th, Locus Focus presents a special presentation of a new documentary by Barbara Bernstein. Fighting Goliath is a story about the frenetic exploitation of the Canadian tar sands and its rippling effects across the continent. Tune in on Monday, July 7th from 10 to 11 a.m. to KABU 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River, 104.3 FM Corvallis, or listen online at kboo.fm.
Good morning. I'm Dave Mazza, and you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne will be back next week. Well, perhaps you've had the experience of applying for a job or trying to rent an apartment, and as you're working your way down that application, you suddenly come across a little box that asks whether you've ever been convicted of a crime or have a criminal record of some sort. You've probably been puzzled about what's that doing on there. Well, so have a lot of other people. And in fact, there's a campaign starting up here in our city to have that become something that employers and landlords can no longer do. It's a campaign that's being headed up by a coalition led by the Urban League of Portland, and we're going to spend this morning talking about that. Our guest this morning is Midge Purcell, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Urban League, and she's going to not only talk about what the ramifications of this particular trend in employment and rentals are, but what we're going to be doing about it. So we hope if you've had an experience with this sort of situation that you'll give us a call at 503-231-8187. Midge, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, as I just was saying in the warm-up here, that we have this situation where employers and landlords seem to be wanting a lot of information, including whether we've ever been convicted of a crime. How much of a problem is this, and what are the ramifications of this being on applications?
It's a huge problem, especially for people who have had previous arrest records or conviction records. And as we know, because we live in a society where mass incarceration is a policy and a norm, that it affects a huge number of people. For instance, more than 32,354 people in Oregon are currently incarcerated or on community supervision, and consequently, they face discrimination in housing and employment after their release. But I also want to say that some applications ask whether you have been arrested, and that arrest may not have led to a conviction. So you're being asked whether you've had a arrest record that may not have resulted in conviction, but you may be discriminated on the basis of that arrest. So we feel that this is a huge problem. I think that the amount of folks that are affected by it is larger than we know. You know, I read a statistic that said 65 million people in this country have had previous arrest or conviction records. That's the size of the country of France. It's exacerbated by the fact that employers and landlords are really reluctant to hire people with previous arrest records and convictions. So therefore, these folks are caught in a situation where if they've paid their debt to society, they still are penalized. And as a result, they're into a spiral of poverty. They're into a spiral of unemployment. A lot of them find themselves homeless or in really unstable housing situations. And under those circumstances, that people are more likely to be put in a situation where they are more likely to reoffend if indeed they have. So we feel that this is something that can be done to address that problem, to give people a fair chance, to allow them just to get their foot in the door.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it places the person with a conviction on their record in this bind. I mean, the criminal justice system often is making, especially if they're continuing on parole or probation, these requirements that they be gainfully employed. And yet here is this, right, barrier they can't get around. And, I was going to say that before we move into the campaign, we certainly don't want to ignore the racial disparity aspect of this. While we are incarcerating people of all colors, ethnicities, and belief systems at an incredible rate, this impact is particularly heavy on communities of color.
Absolutely. Particularly heavy on communities of color, and in particular the African-American community. The Urban League did a report at the end of 2009 called The State of Black Oregon. And as a matter of fact, we are about to release the second iteration of The State of Black Oregon at the end of this year. But it revealed that, although African Americans are 2% of the population, they are more than 10% of the prison population. And I believe currently that's 11% of the prison population in the state of Oregon. So we are talking about disproportionate impact in terms of the African American population. I mean, I think it's also significant that African American unemployment is around 18%. And I think that the issue of people reentering or leaving incarceration is part of that problem of incredibly high unemployment rates for the African American population. So while our community is particularly affected by it, I think that you're right. I think that in Oregon, all folks are impacted by a system that incarcerates folks at a very, very high level. You know, the Urban League and a lot of our community partners have been working on this issue. I'd like to shout out to Partnership for Safety and Justice, who has been incredibly vigilant and effective on promoting policies that reduce the number of folks that are incarcerated and trying to develop alternatives to incarceration. So this is a huge issue for our state. And, you know, this is one of the consequences of a policy of mass incarceration. This is not a panacea. It's not a huge fix, but it is a small fix that gives people an opportunity to kind of reenter to society, to support their families, to reenter our economy, and to make a contribution to their communities and a contribution to supporting their families.
And I guess we probably should say that this is not a problem unique to Oregon or to Portland, that the same trend, I gather, is nationwide in terms of landlords and employers, you know, trying to solicit more and more information and as in such areas as whether a person has been arrested or not. Right. So it's not just something unique here to Oregon.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I mean, this issue and the solution around removing the box on application forms is getting national traction. President Barack Obama has mentioned, you know, this as a possible solution to the barriers that people who have previous records and convictions face. And you know, in at least 55 other cities and 9 other states, they have passed similar ordinances. So not only is it not a problem that's unique to Portland, this solution is not a unique solution. You know, Portland often, you know, kind of prides itself in being, you know, kind of ahead of the curve. You know, I think that it's really time that we look to other cities and see what works and what is working in other cities in terms of integrating folks back into our economy, back into our community, and back into our society.
Well, before we get into the specifics of the campaign and how that's going to be mapped out, just want to remind folks that you're listening to Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza. Joanne will be back next week. I'm talking this morning with Midge Purcell, who's Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Urban League of Portland. We're talking about the issue of employers and landlords asking for information on people's criminal records and even their arrest records, and this new campaign, grassroots campaign, to eliminate the box, get rid of that on the application form. If you've had this experience and it's had some impact on you, which I'm sure it has, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Or if you just want to weigh in with your feelings about this, give us a call. Well, Midge, the campaign is to remove the box. You're starting off looking at doing a city ordinance, right?
Right, we are indeed. We are trying to get this ordinance passed in the city of Portland. We feel that it's a good place to start. As I said, many other cities and other jurisdictions have passed similar ordinances. And, you know, we feel that this is in line with what the city of Portland says its values are. The Urban League and a lot of other organizations have been working in the city of Portland for the last several years about promoting an equity agenda. And I think this is a real tangible example of how we can implement an equity a policy that will have clear impacts on people who are affected by disparities. So we feel that it is in line with the direction that the city says that it wants to go in. We feel that passing such an ordinance would, add value, add stability to the city of Portland. And so, we are currently talking with our city commissioners about this ordinance and also developing a grassroots campaign. You mentioned the campaign that we're, in the process of rolling out. We are joined in this effort by the AFL-CIO, who has prioritized this issue, and Oregon Action, an organization that I'm sure that you're familiar with. But we have many organizations around the table and many organizations that are stepping up to endorse this campaign. We are also doing a petition campaign. We just started last week at the Good in the Hood Festival and collected nearly 1,000 signatures. Our goal is to collect, at least 5,000 signatures before we go, to take to city council. So this has a deep resonance in the community. We're getting incredible amount of support because a lot of people are impacted by it, whether they've been discriminated against themselves or they've had a family member or a community member that they know. And let me say, what people are telling us in the community is that because of that box, because of these blanket bans, they don't have an opportunity to talk about the circumstances of their arrest records or convictions. People who have not had contact with the criminal justice system for 12 years, for 20 years, do not have an opportunity to tell an employer, to tell a prospective landlord that, had an arrest record for 20 years. So this mechanism will allow people to explain the circumstances of their arrest or the circumstances of the conviction. Because let me clarify, it doesn't mean that landlords or employers can't ask about convictions at all, can't ask about arrest records at all. What it means is that they ask at the end of the process, at the end of an interview process, or at the end of, or at a different stage of the screening process for housing, rather than a box on an application that you look at and then throw it in the bin.
Right. I mean, there's some context in that way. I mean, otherwise, yeah, as you say, it's this enormous filter that is being applied, whether it's a 20-year-old transgression or something more current. Well, our listeners seem to be waking up this morning. We've got some callers, so we're going to go to the phone lines. And if you're just joining us now, I'm talking with Midge Purcell, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Urban League of Portland. We're talking about the Ban the Box campaign that the league is leading here locally to stop the practice of employers and landlords having a little box on that application asking whether you've been convicted of a crime or been arrested. So give us a call at 503-231-8187 if you've had that experience or want to weigh in on this issue. And we have Garrett on the line. Good morning, Garrett.
Hi. I work in medical transportation where I transport basically the most vulnerable population we have. And would you be opposed to a box for have you ever been convicted of a violent crime or a sex crime? Because that is an instant disqualification. There is nothing anyone could ever say to get past that. this job requires that you never have done that. You cannot be allowed to handle these people if you've ever done those kinds of things.
Yes, of course. I'm glad you asked that question. Two things. I mean, there are state regulations and federal regulations about vulnerable populations. And so, you know, those kind of background checks will always apply. Again, you know, we're asking to take it off the application. It doesn't mean that an employer cannot do a background check and in the circumstances of your employment, that is required. And we're asking employers to make a good faith judgment as to whether a previous arrest or conviction is relevant to employment. You know, obviously, if you have, if you're a banker and you know, someone will be handling large sums of money, you know, you do have an interest in finding out whether that person has had previous convictions for theft or grand larceny. Also, if you're dealing with children or other vulnerable populations, of course, you as an employer, you will have, you have the right to know. Actually, you have an obligation to know whether that person has been convicted of previous sex crimes. So I just want to be clear. We're not saying that employers cannot do background checks and not do due diligence in circumstances where they have to protect their business or have to protect the public. What we're saying is the sequence of that, the sequence of that process. This ordinance says that, you know, you can ask about previous background checks, previous convictions, if it is relevant during an interview, or right at the place of making a final offer. And if the person does have a previous arrest or conviction that, you know, will impact their ability to do the job well and safely, then you have the discretion as an employer to make that determination. So, I mean, I hope that answered your question. We're not saying that background checks cannot be done. We're just saying that by taking it off the application and allowing the person to talk about their qualifications, it gives them a fair chance to have employment or to be eligible for employment that they are suitable for.
Right. And I think that's important too, to point out the fact that, you know, this isn't opening up the gates and leaving no ability to address those issues. And as you point out, and particularly with dealing with vulnerable populations, there are an array of state and federal laws in place. Well, thank you for your call, Garrett. We appreciate it. All right. Well, let's go back to the phone lines. We have Joan on the line. Good morning, Joan.
Hi there. Very interesting subject. I have something to mention which may be off the subject, and if it is, please tell me so. Oh. But I have in the past, when applying for housing, noticed that a lot of the initial applications, more and more, people are asking right up front for social security numbers, bank account numbers, date of birth, mothers, you know, practically everything they could use to commit identity theft on you. And this certainly can affect people who may not have such great credit records for whatever reason there may be. And so it seems like the issue is even broader than just being asked about arrest, because it's possible for people to have a kind of incredible screen just based on your social security number alone, which would give them everything they want to know, and which is really none of their business. So, and this is, of course, more than just employers and apartment managers and so on. So So even though this may be a little off the subject, it certainly ties in with it. And I'm wondering if this sort of thing has been considered about, you know, demanding a person's social security number up front and that sort of thing. Is that clear?
Yes. We haven't actually looked at the issue of social security numbers, but we have looked at the issue of credit checks and unwarranted credit checks. We were part of legislation two sessions ago that was put forward by Senator Dianne Rosenbaum that called for a moratorium on credit checks for employment purposes. And, you know, we're calling for low barrier screening in terms of housing. And that means is that you begin to remove the barriers to housing, to access to housing and housing stability. And again, you know, we're not asking landlords to not ask for information that will put other tenants in jeopardy, but we're asking them to have discretion about asking for information that you know, create barriers and unnecessary barriers, you know, based on things like credit checks over the last 10 years or previous arrests and convictions that may not have any bearing on whether that person is going to be a safe and good tenant.
Right.
Yes, thank you. It also gives people, when people can ask information which they're not entitled to, they can also do things with that information that might not be either fair or legal.
That's
once
correct.
They have the information, whether or not they rent the person the apartment or give them the job, they now know this thing about the person.
Right.
And really, it's none of their business, you know.
It's also no guarantee that they will properly dispose of that information once
That's
they've acquired
correct.
It. Ends up in the trash can and someone else gets a hold of it. Well, thanks for the
That's
call,
right.
Joan.
You're welcome.
All Bye-bye. Right. Well, just tuning in, we're about halfway through our hour here. I'm talking with Midge Purcell, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Urban League of Portland. We're talking about the Ban the Box campaign to remove that little nasty box that's on too many applications for jobs or for rentals that asks for your criminal background, whether you've been convicted or even arrested. And if you want to join us in the conversations, particularly if you've had this experience, give us a call at 503-231-8187. You mentioned that other cities have done this, and of course, even the president has mentioned this. Are we seeing this as a phenomenon in really large metropolitan areas, or is it kind of across the board thing? I guess, is Portland a typical city in view of the other cities that have adopted these type of ordinances?
Well, surprisingly, cities and places that you wouldn't think of as, pardon me if you're from these places, sort of implementing progressive policy has moved forward on this. You know, places like Kentucky, places like Minnesota, places like Nevada. I mean, a wide spectrum of municipalities has introduced and passed this kind of policy and legislation, and places like North and South Carolina.
Wow.
Although ordinances have been passed in places like Newark, New Jersey, and Philadelphia, as a matter of fact, our particular ordinance is modeled on ordinances that have passed in Philadelphia, Newark, and Seattle, and I call that the gold standard. And I feel that that we want to make sure that we campaign for something that's impactful and effective. And I think that there are variations of this ordinance. Some only relate to kind of city practices, internal employment practices. Some only relate to businesses that the city do business with. But I think that the most effective of these ordinances are the ones that cover all employers and the ones that cover all landlords. And we feel that this is where the city of Portland should be. And this is the ordinance that we're going forward with.
So does the... Yeah, and you, I gather, I'm sure you've done, you know, your homework. You're not going to be running into any legal challenges around this is some sort of inappropriate intrusion on the ability of private individuals to enter into contracts. I mean, obviously, since they've done this in other cities, I guess.
No, I don't believe we should. I am... this has been implemented successfully in other places. Again, we are not telling employers or landlords that they cannot do background checks if they feel that it's appropriate. It's just when those background checks take place and giving people with previous arrests and convictions the opportunity to talk about their qualifications and their suitability for the job. You know, there is an enforcement mechanism, you know, I think that one of the things that we're telling people, we're telling employers that have questions about it, is that, you know, this shouldn't cost you anything. And You have the opportunity to help society address an issue that, you know, we either pay for now or address now or address down the road in terms of more prisons, more incarceration, more probabilities of people to reoffend. So, you know, we're asking employers and we're asking landlords to, you know, to join us in addressing a real social issue. It shouldn't be any significant cost to them, you know, I think that it'll have a huge impact on our community and a huge impact on society.
Well, we're going to go back to the phone line, but first just want to remind you, you're listening to Voices from the Edge. I'm Dave Mazza. Joanne will be back next week, and we're talking this morning with Midge Purcell, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Urban League of Portland. We're talking about the Ban the Box efforts being done here, being led by the league, and I don't want to forget that we want to talk about an event that's coming up next week. But if you've been involved in this situation where you've been filling out an application and suddenly they're asking you whether you've been convicted of a crime or have been arrested, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We also want to hear from other folks, of course, obviously, who may have an opinion on this. So we're going to the phone lines. We have Joanne on the line. Good morning, Joanne.
Hello. I understand that landlords do not rent or do not want to rent to Section 8 vouchers, to people that have Section 8 vouchers. And I guess if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me. But I'm thinking maybe your campaign might help bring attention to this big problem in Portland and Oregon. And Dave, hello, and how is Alan?
Oh, he's doing well, too. He's out there playing rock and roll.
Well, I'm really happy to be able to report that issue is being addressed and has been addressed during the last legislative session, primarily to the efforts of a number of organizations and Representative Tina Kotek. there has been a bill passed that prohibits discrimination of Section 8 applicants. And again, landlords are not allowed. As a matter of fact, I think that the ordinance came into effect yesterday on the, or the July 7th. Okay, right. Thank you. July 7th, or will come into effect July 7th, that prohibits landlords for saying we do not accept Section 8 applicants, which I think is a huge step forward. You know, it was an effort that came out of the fact that many people who had Section 8 vouchers could not find housing outside designated areas. And so this is an incredible victory and an incredible step forward that will give other, you know, opportunities to people who are seeking housing that are that have Section 8 vouchers. So, it's an incredible step forward.
Yeah. I think it's so important to be kind of rolling back on all fronts this, you know, trend that's been going on for so long, where it seems to feel that, you know, employers or landlords or whoever have this right to endless amounts of information and, you know, whether or not it has anything to do with anything. So whether it's, you know, Section 8 or what have you. Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines because we have Deanna on the line. Good morning, Deanna.
Good morning. This is a fascinating and really important subject to be talking about, I know. And I think as a way of beginning to address the huge injustice of incarceration of people of color, it's a brilliant thing to do. But I'm also thinking about something which I think Mitch Purcell just touched on, was how this is a benefit to all of society. And I'm going to suggest it's a benefit to employers. Look at the incredible pool, the wealth of talent and experience that they would be denying themselves the advantage of if they continue, you know, whether wanting to or not wanting to use this discriminatory filter. Okay, thank you. That's all I wanted to add.
I'm really glad that that you mentioned that. I mean, this is an important lens that that we at the Urban League use, you know, to talk about the loss to our society of having such high levels of unemployment and underemployment and people who have no access to the economy. It does limit the creativity and innovation that our society should have access to. You know, when you're talking about thousands of people who are chronically unemployed, I mean, unemployed for long periods of time. We're talking about human capital. We're talking about human capital that's lost, and that's lost to our society. And we feel that this is an incredible waste. And if Oregon and Portland is going to be truly competitive in our society, truly competitive going forward, we need to have the brain power and creativity of all of our residents. And this is one way that we can ensure that there aren't barriers to, you know, actually harnessing that creativity and innovation. And that we as a society have access to that. You know, For those of you who are old enough to remember, there used to be an ad from the National Negro College Fund, and the ad said, "A mind is a terrible thing to waste." And I think that this is really amplified by I mean, that is so significant in this case. Many, many minds and many, many you know, capable people are being barred from making a contribution to our society, yeah. And we all lose.
Well, thank you for your call and for your question. We're going to pause here for a moment before we go back to the discussion, and I just want to remind you of why you need to stay tuned to KBOO 90.7 FM. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9 on Press Watch, host Teresa Mitchell looks at anarcho-socialism versus climate change and the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fagering speaks with Michael Diebert about his new book, In the Shadow of Saint Death, The Gulf Cartel and the Price of America's Drug War in Mexico. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the U.S. pushes successfully for the remilitarization of Japan. Native Americans roughed up and detained at AT&T Park in San Francisco get an apology from and a pair of tickets, but they want much more. And a report from the Gaza Strip on the deadly impact of continuing Israeli bombing there. At 10 on Between the Covers, host Lynn Mollick speaks with author and editor Todd Davies about her latest book in the Jam Today series, Jam Today 2, The Revolution Will Not Be Catered. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Rashonda Tate Billingsley, author of 30 books, including Let the Church Say Amen, which has been made into a movie. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. I encourage everyone to do that. And again, I'm Dave Mazza, filling in today for Joanne. She'll be back next week. This is Voices from the Edge, and we're talking with Midge Purcell, Director of Advocacy and Public Policy at the Urban League of Portland. The League is leading an effort, along with an array of other community organizations, to ban the box, remove that little box on applications for rentals or for employment that inquire whether you've been arrested or been convicted of a crime. And if you want to give us a call and join the conversation, particularly if you've had this experience, give us a call at 503-231-8187. You know, before, we're now looking, your first target here, Midge, is the city, but there is a plan to go and take this to the state and try to just apply it across the state. And you're looking at, what, the 2015 legislative session?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. We feel that that Portland is a good start, but this is an issue that I think affects many, many, many Oregonians across the state. You know, at the beginning of the program, I said that 32,000, more than 32,000 Oregonians are currently incarcerated, and that's across the state, across the board, and either we believe that people have paid their debt to society, or they continue to pay their debt to society. And, I think that this is an issue that we really need to address as a society as a whole. So we are going to look at passing a bill in the state legislature that looks at discrimination against people who have previous convictions or previous arrest records. And, we hope that we're able to get the strongest remedy possible on the state level to address this issue. But we are hoping that Portland will lead the way, and that, by the time that the 2015 legislative session begins, we will have a strong ordinance in place in the city that, kind of lifts up good practice mm-hmm. in terms of people with previous arrest records and convictions, and you know, and shows that you know the world doesn't come to an end when these kinds of measures are put in place. You know, you mentioned that this has been implemented in other places, and you know, we're seeing from those cities and states where it has been put in place, you know, there has not been a significant increase in, you know, kind of in theft or violent crime. So, you know, we feel that this is an effective remedy. We want to see it as widely applied as possible. And, you know, we feel that only benefit can come from implementing this policy across the board in the city and eventually in the state.
Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines because it looks like folks are starting to call in large numbers. And we have Ronald on the line. Good morning, Ronald.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I was just curious about how is the teeth going to be implemented in affecting this new ordinance that's coming out, because I don't have a record, but I'm a person of color, and I actually had lots of discrimination in rental. But I've been told time and time again that landlords have the freedom, and particularly in this state, to do just about what they want to do. And I've heard of high-profile cases where you've had these people that come in and try to get property, and they try to rent property rather. And but there's a lot of us that seem to fall underneath the radar in these low-profile cases. And I was wondering, so I guess I may have had a couple of questions. I was wondering, and how long would it take to bring, an issue like this to get it addressed? I mean, it seems like it, you know, in the past has taken a long time been a long kind of arduous process at trying to remedy this kind of a situation, you know. And that's all I had to say.
Sure. Well, you know, you addressed a couple of issues about discrimination generally. You know, we all know that that housing discrimination is illegal, and but getting that discrimination addressed has always been a problem for folks that that face discrimination in housing. You know, we have been in conversations with the Fair Housing Council, who you know, quite interested in this particular policy to, you know, to add to a variety of policies that challenge discrimination. You know, I think part of the problem is that that when people of color feel that they're being discriminated against in terms of housing, they don't follow through. And I think that it's important that if people feel that they have been discriminated against, that they take it to the Fair Housing Council, they initiate an investigation, and they you know, they insist that that landlords are held accountable for discrimination.
Is that a resource that's available? And if so, I haven't really heard much information about it in mass, you know, as being a like an alternative resource to go to. Still now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, housing discrimination is illegal. I mean, it does happen, but it is illegal, and there are remedies if you have been or feel that you've been discriminated against, you know, and it's down to the landlord to prove that, you know, he or she hasn't discriminated, you know, in terms of your application. And, you know, there are the Fair Housing Council often does, you know, they do these these blind checks where, you know, they'll ask a person of color to apply, and then they'll ask a white person to apply. And, you know, still in this day and age, you know, that the person of color still is disadvantaged in terms of access to housing. And so, you know, we need to have those kinds of examples, and people need to challenge it, because there are remedies in place, and in order for it to be implemented, we're going to have to challenge it and hold landlords accountable. Yes, there are, and I think that what we hope to do with this ordinance is to put in robust enforcement in place. So if people feel that they still have been discriminated against unjustly because of a previous conviction, there will be remedy for them through the enforcement process.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean to really carry on. This will be my last issue. Like I said, the enforcement sounds great, but we understand that enforcement and resources allocated, like, you know, money is allocated to make sure that those investigations could follow through. Is that another issue, or does money come automatically with the say, like an enforcement of an ordinance such as what you're proposing?
You know, everything costs money. I think that that this ordinance is a low-cost remedy for a high-cost problem. If we don't address these issues, you know, we're talking about continued drain on the taxpayer in terms of paying for mass incarceration or reoffending and sending people back to prison. So, you know, I think that, you know, we're looking at small implementation costs. I mean, one of the things that we're talking about or will be talking about with the city is how they can implement that through kind of existing mechanisms that they have within the city.
And the ordinance is a tool, and like any other tool, it requires us, you know, we get this in place, but it's going to require us as a community to continue to press the city to make use of that tool, because the city has lots of tools, as you've noted. They have lots of enforcement mechanisms for various issues in place. They don't always apply them because they get knocked down in priority. Well, it's all of our jobs to ensure that that remains a high priority. I'm going to have to move on, Ronald, but really great questions, and thank you for participating in the conversation.
Thank you for addressing them.
Well, before we go back to the phone lines, we got a couple of calls, so I want to squeeze in. I do want to make sure that folks know about this event coming up on July 15th.
Yes. You know, thank you for mentioning that, and we hope that people will come out. You know, we want to make sure that people in the community know about this campaign, so we're going to be doing a community event. And this community event, you know, is open to everyone, but we really hope that people who have been impacted by this issue will come out and tell their story. There will be an opportunity for people to tell their own story, to share their experience if they feel that they have been discriminated against in terms of employment or housing. You know, we know that this is a huge problem, but, you know, while it's a societal problem, it also is a very, very personal problem. You know, we have people working on this campaign who have done everything right after they've, you know, gotten out of prison. You know, they've gone into education, they've gotten their degrees, they have availed themselves of skills and vocational skills, and they still can't find employment. You know, and so this is an issue of fairness. So, you know, we're asking people to come and share their story. We really want to show the depth of feeling in the community about this issue, and we also want to show policymakers how this impacts, you know, people in their personal lives, how this impacts their families. So on July 15th, we're holding a community event where we're asking people to come, tell their stories, to get involved in the campaign in some way. It's going to be held at the Highland Christian Center in the Fellowship Hall at 7600 Northeast Gleason Street in Portland. That's Highland Community Christian Center at 7600 Northeast Gleason Street, starting at 6 p.m. We really hope to see as many folks possible there. And we hope people will join us as we move forward with this campaign.
Great. Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines because we had a couple of callers who've been patiently waiting. We have Roman on the line. Good morning.
We're asking people to come tell their story, to get involved in the campaign.
Roman, you got to turn down the radio if you've got it on.
It's going to be held at the Highland Christian Center in the Fellowship
Hall.
We're going
to go to Joseph. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning. I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is, when I heard the program, and as I was dropping off my child at daycare to go to work, I thought, well, this is a great-sounding proposal, but I know there's going to be pushback from people who are frightened to have ex-cons, people that have been in prison, or even people that have committed sex crimes. What sounds like a simple solution, it may be simplistic, but I thought if you want this campaign to be successful, you might want to put some common sense suggestions out there for people. For instance, get to know people you don't know. And if you're going to leave your child with somebody, it's so easy now to do background checks. There's so much paranoia in our world, especially this country, about people that have been in prison. They're not given a second chance. We don't treat them like they've paid their dues. We continue to punish them after they've gone, and nobody here disagrees with that, that I've heard on the program. But there's so many things in the wheel, or the cogs on the wheel, that keep them from being successful. In other countries, they have sponsors and to make sure you stay out of prison. But I think this is a great idea. But I say that if you want it to be successful, try to allay the fears of people who are afraid to have those kinds of people living next to them.
Thank you, Joseph.
I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but...
Yes, and I just want to reiterate that we are not advocating that background checks do not take place where relevant to the employment.
It's employment, such as if sex crimes, where if they're going to be taking care of children.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
and you know, again, you know, there are state and federal regulations about you know, those areas of employment that impact vulnerable populations.
I'm sorry, I thought we were talking about housing. So employment, well, it's important with employment too. I get it.
Right.
So, and I just want to say I really appreciate what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Because we call ourselves a Christian nation, but we don't act like it when it comes to people that have made mistakes.
No, absolutely.
That's what I like to call it. So,
thank you for your call, Joseph, and your questions.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye bye. It's a difficult thing to overcome. We unfortunately have a society that has fueled this fear about people, and I think Joseph raised a question that's going to be challenging the campaign, as people have been led to believe that, you know, we need to be in such a fearful state. I mean, I know we've had sexual abuse brought up repeatedly, and you know, and ironically, of course, the vast majority of sexual abuse still happens within families as opposed to the predators. But you know, they don't do TV shows every week about that. So
absolutely,
we're having to deal with that.
Yes.
So, we're almost out of time here, Midge. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know about other than they should be showing up for the Fair a Chance event?
Yes, you know, you may see a petition that supports the campaign in the community. I'm asking people to sign that petition. And also, you know, just contact your city official to say that you support this campaign.
And if they have any, they want information, they can call the Urban League at 503-280-2600.
That's correct.
Midge, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with this very important campaign. I'm Dave Mazza. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne will be back next week. Stay tuned for Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch.
Heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, just about 10 o'clock, actually 9 o'clock here on this Thursday morning. In about a half hour, join us for Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering speaks with Michael Dybert about his new book, In the Shadow of Saint Death, The Gulf Cartel and the Price of America's Drug War in Mexico. At 10, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the U.S. pushes successfully for the remilitarization of Japan. Native Americans roughed up and detained at AT&T Park in San Francisco get an apology and a pair of tickets, but they want what they want much more. And a report from the Gaza Strip on the deadly impact of continuing Israeli bombing there. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Lynn Molick speaks with author and editor Todd Davies about her latest book, In the Jam Today, in the Jam Today series. Jam Today 2, The Revolution Will Not Be Catered. At 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Rashonda Tate Billingsley, author of 30 books, including Let the Church Say Amen, which has been made into a movie. But first, it's Press Watch up next with host Teresa Mitchell looking at anarcho-socialism versus climate change and the news you're not supposed to know. Stay with us.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series, which on Saturday, July 5th at 7 p.m. will show The Price of Sex. This feature-length documentary sheds light on